Daniel, because that's precisely what Jesus is doing. Now, we haven't got to that point yet, but we will see it this morning. Jesus is going to bring Daniel up, as a matter of fact. That's why we took the time to go back and to find out what Daniel said. Now, to set all of this up, remember, Daniel and the people of Israel have been taken captive by the Babylonians. Their city has been destroyed. The temple has been destroyed. They have been exiled and carried away captives to the land of Babylon. Today, we know that place as Iraq. They were on the plains of Shinar, where Nebuchadnezzar, the ruler of the Babylonians, was at. And he had this all set up, and he had conquered them. He had defeated them, and he had taken them all captive. And while they were there, God had spoken to the prophet Jeremiah before the Babylonians came in to tell them what he was going to do. Because of their disbelief and the rejection of the God who had loved them, God said, I am going to allow the Babylonians to be my hand of discipline to get my people back to where they need to be. So what you need to do, this is what the prophet Jeremiah was saying, is you need to submit to this. In other words, go willingly. I'm doing this for your benefit. It's not going to feel like it, but that's what the case is. So through the prophet Jeremiah, God said, go into Babylon. Now, they've been in Babylon. Daniel is now an old man. It's some 70 years later. And Daniel, being a man of God, has opened the words that were written by the prophet Jeremiah, who was his predecessor, who had lived before him. And as Daniel is reading his words, he finds in Jeremiah that God had promised that this discipline of the people would only be for 70 years. God always works in periods of seven, because the number seven is not perfect, it means complete. God will complete what he does in seven, hence the creation. 6 days of creation, the one day of rest, seven. God had completed the work. So God works in these seven. So Daniel is reading the book of Jeremiah, and I want you to get this in your mind, in Babylon, okay, as a slave to the Babylonians, okay? Sharp guy, loves the Lord, and he begins, as he's reading through Jeremiah, he comes to the point where God said, I'm going to send you over there for 70 years. And Daniel stops and thinks about it, and like you and me, he's probably going, oh. And he realizes it's been 70 years. And all of a sudden, this causes Daniel to go, oh my gosh. It caused him to do what our day should cause us to do. He immediately goes to the Lord in prayer. And he confesses not only the fault and the sins and the shortcomings of his people, Israel, but of himself personally. And as he's praying, God sends a messenger. We know them as angels. An angel is nothing more than a messenger. That's what they are. Okay? So God sends a messenger to Daniel to explain to him, since the 70 years is over, what is going to take place next. That angel's name is Gabriel, the same one that would show up later to Mary and Joseph and tell them that the Redeemer was going to come and he was going to come through Mary. We're getting ready to celebrate that here in a couple months, huh? That same angel. Because as we've said many times in the past, Gabriel is the messenger of Messiah. Every time Gabriel shows up, he's talking about Messiah. In other words, he's talking about Jesus. Every single time. And so Gabriel goes to Daniel and tells Daniel that, listen, the moment you began to pray, I was dispatched to come to bring you this message. This is in Daniel chapter 9, and all this stuff is the setup. And then in the 24th verse, Daniel says this, and we're not going to spend time on the 24th verse today. We're going to get to that later. But he begins to say that, listen, there are 70 weeks decreed, in other words, determined, that God has set apart for your people, for your city, and for your temple. That's what he's saying. So we know very clearly what this has to do with. Now remember, the sevens, what they called weeks, were periods of, imagine that, 7 years. Like our 10 years is a decade, their 7 weeks, or seven, their week was a 7 year period. They didn't have decades, they called them weeks, 7 weeks of years. So in other words, there's going to be a 490 period, Gabriel tells Daniel, that God is going to accomplish his ultimate purpose in redemption. And he goes through that. And what he does is that first part of that we talked about. And when he comes here, he said that their first part is going to be broken into two. There's going to be seven periods of seven, in other words, 49 years. And then there's going to be 62 periods of seven, 439 years. And so the total is 483 years. Okay? And this is when that 483 years comes to pass, Daniel chapter 9, verse 26. After the 62 weeks, that's the 483. Now, we already talked about this. Messiah shall be cut off. Okay? In other words, literally in the Hebrew, it says he will be executed. Gee, this is 500 years before Jesus entered the picture. 500 years. And he said, after the 483 years, Messiah will be executed. We would say crucified. Okay? But notice, not for himself. He wouldn't be executed for himself. The Messiah, the Redeemer, in his first coming, did not come for himself. He came to seek and to save that which was lost, and to give his life a ransom for many. So he's going to be executed, but not because of himself. In other words, because of you and I. Okay, so there's the end of that. After that takes place, now notice, and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Okay, now this is Daniel, folks. His city and his sanctuary had already been destroyed 70 years before by one Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. And yet he's talking about another city and another temple, or in other words, a temple. So clearly, Daniel is saying that there's going to be another point in time where there will be a city of Jerusalem and there will be a temple and it will also be destroyed. That's what he's talking about. So the people of the prince who was to come shall destroy the city and and the sanctuary, and then the end of it shall be with a flood. Notice this now. Until the end of the war. Did you catch that? The war. What war? The enemy against the people of God. That's the war. Everything that has happened throughout history has been because our enemy, one Lucifer, has been trying to stop what Jesus was going to do. He has to get rid of the Jews. He has to. He had to get rid of them the first time so that Messiah couldn't be born. And he thought he had them, the New Testament tells us. And when Jesus went to the cross, you can just see Lucifer and his minions, the demons, demon realm, demonic realm, and they were laughing and they were cheering that they had finally defeated God's Redeemer. They thought they had won, but something happened 3 days later. And all of a sudden it was, uh-oh, we haven't won anything. In fact, it has been our defeat because of the resurrection. They failed to recognize it. He had done everything to stop Messiah from coming into Israel. On our Wednesday night study, we're just about going to be in chapter 6. And chapter 6 was a major attempt by Lucifer to pervert the line of Messiah. There was a major, because if he can mess up humanity, then Messiah cannot come and crush his head as the promise had been made to Eve. Okay? We call the result of that attempt the Nephilim. If you're interested in that, then you need to be here on Wednesday nights. But that's where we're headed on Wednesday night. So the end of it shall come with the flood until the end, till the end of the war, that war that we're talking about. Satan could not stop God from bringing the Messiah that would bring redemption to mankind and would result in his defeat. So what he's trying to do now is stop the return of the Messiah. Because Jesus won't come back by his own words. You will not see me again. Remember Jesus said this to the Jews. You will not see me again until you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And he said that after the triumphal entry. So it wasn't the triumphal entry. That was a bunch of flapjaws at that point anyways. He's talking about a future time. Jesus said, I will not return until my people understand what they have done. And then they cry out to me and then I will come. So if Lucifer lost the first time for him to come as the Redeemer, what do you think he's going to do for the second time when he comes to reign? He's got to get Israel out of the picture, folks. It's that simple. Because if there's no Israel, there's no one to call for the Lord to come back. Hence, 2,000 years of history for the Jews. Fast forward the tape to today. The hatred of the Jews is growing moment by moment. Why do you think that is? Because the war has not come to an end. And it won't until the king comes back, destroys the kingdom of darkness, and establishes his kingdom of light. So the end of it shall be with a flood until the end of the war. Notice, desolations are determined. In other words, God has a plan. That's the end of the 69 weeks. Okay, the first part of the verse. The second part of the verse is the days that we live in. We've been looking at that. We call that the Olivet Discourse. That's what we've been looking. Okay? So we have looked at the first part of that, 2,000 years, what I've been calling the great delay. What delay? The delay between that 69th week, because remember Gabriel said there was 70, and that last 70 period. There's this huge gap in there between those, between the fulfillment. In other words, God has put on hold his work with the people of Israel. And what has taken place in that gap is you and I. 2,000 years. We call it church history. We call it the age of grace. And Paul told us very, very clearly, actually before Paul, the Lord's brother James, half-brother James, pastor of the church in Jerusalem, said that's precisely what God would do. That he would bring the nations to himself and call out a people for himself, hence you and I. And after that, he would return and restore the tabernacle of David. But not until those people were called out. Paul would agree with that and would later write that God, for a time being, has set Israel aside. But when God is finished bringing the Gentiles, the nations, into a relationship with them, then God will take those people away and will turn back to his people Israel. That's what's happening. So we looked at the first part of that, and we got it up to that point. We talked about how Matthew and Mark both are very accurate, because it's all based on the questions when Jesus said, do you see that temple, this city? There's not going to be a stone left upon one another, right, as he went through this. And their questions, when are these things going to take place? What will be the sign, or when will be the sign of your coming, and when is the sign of the end of the age? And that's the three questions that Jesus has been answering in this thing that we call the Olivet Discourse. So we look through the first part of that, all the way up through this great delay, as I call it. But then something changes. That was verses 4 through 8. Now in Matthew 24, look at verse 9. Then. Now see, I've shared this so many times with you, and for those of you that have been through our classes on inductive Bible study, you cannot overlook anything. Because these simple words that we tend to blow over will tell you everything that you need to know. Remember, the three questions all had to do with when. So you're in a time frame, because when is associated with time. So when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the sign of the end of the age? And then, so each of those has to do with time. That's why Jesus keeps repeating this English word, then. It means next in the line of sequence. I've had people say, you can't look at Matthew like that and say, well, nation rising against nation started in 1914. How dare you put dates on it? How dare I put dates on it? I'm just listening to what the Lord said. And if you take it sequentially, it makes total sense. If you do it any other way, you get confused, and that's why people are walking around in a blur today, because sadly, most teachers either won't do this or don't have the ability to do it because they don't study it. It's a sad commentary on the church today. So this idea of the word then, Jesus is telling us, remember we saw, these will be the beginning of sorrows, and then, and then, and then, and then we come to verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to what? Tribulation. Phlipsis. There's a word for you. Makes you drool. Phlipsis. Okay? And what it means is to be pressed down and ground. That's tribulation. That's what the word means. It's only the English word tribulation, which is why I don't like calling the 70th week, tribulation. But this is where we get that title from. Jesus just said there would be tribulation. He didn't call it tribulation, so we've just sort of adapted that. We're going to see there's a change from tribulation to another phrase that's going to expand on this. So notice that the reason we see this here is because something is changing. Everything that has happened to this point all concerned this great delay, the period of time you and I get into. But now, because of what Jesus said then, the next thing in the series is they're going to deliver you up to tribulation. Now, who's the you here? You just said that the church wasn't going to be gone, so Peter and James, you're right, they won't be there. The you here is the people that they're asking about, Israel. They're concerned about their nation. They're concerned about their people. They're standing there looking at a temple that he has just told them will not be standing pretty shortly. It's going to be absolutely leveled. And that's precisely what happened in history, by the way, about 30 years after he made this statement. Exactly what he said. So the you here is talking to them, and we're going to see that he's talking to those who would see this stuff at a later date. We won't spend the time on that now. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. So then they will deliver you up to tribulation. So something has changed. This is no longer persecution. Church history is full of persecution. It has never changed. And that's why this, I don't want to get into this again, but this idea that the church has to go through this thing because it has to go through persecution to purify is absolute absurdity. The church has always been persecuted. Paul told Timothy, listen, if you're going to live like Christ, then you're going to be persecuted. What part of that do you fail to not understand? 2,000 years of persecution. Read Fox's Book of Martyrs. The thousands and thousands of believers that suffered persecution and death. So what, we're the only generation that gets to be purified? What about those that came before us 2,000 years? What a stupid thing to say. So this idea of persecution is nuts. It's always been going on. I keep holding this up because I want to be reminded. Ask Pastor Saeed whether or not persecution is still taking place all over this world. By the way, this is really cool. I don't know if you guys heard this on Air One this week, but they did an interview with his wife, and she said she so much appreciates, of course, all of our prayers for her husband. And everybody keeps asking for his release, and she said, I don't want him released yet. She said, he's right where God wants him to be. She said, he is in there sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ with other prisoners. Do you want to take him out of that? Why would you want to do that? Well, because he's suffering. Well, yeah, so did Jesus. What's your point? You see, in America, we don't see that. But when you live in a society and you minister in a place like Iran, this becomes a reality very, very quickly. I've said so many times in the past, how much of our faith that we have to be here today would be exhibited in a place like Iran if you knew that to do what we're doing here this morning was going to cost you possibly a prison sentence, torture, death, suffering, you know, whatever the case may be, how many of us would be willing to meet? Pastor Saeed was. That's why he's in there. And I thought that was phenomenal that his wife would say that. You know, that she would just say, listen, when God wants him free, he will be set free. But until then, God is using him to share the gospel. And I'm just thinking, wow, that is awesome. How do we lose sight of that? Man, Paul chained up in prison, in a dungeon no less, chained together. This guy won countless Roman guards to the Lord while he was chained up. And the church at Philippi was out praying, oh God, please release Paul, because without Paul, the gospel can't Paul go forward. Oh, you know, we've got to have Paul. And Paul writes back to him and says, basically, shut up. Are you telling me that the gospel is chained? Don't you understand that while I'm chained here, that the Praetorian Guard, we're talking about the elite guys that stand next to Caesar himself, they're coming to Bible study, man. The gospel is chained? That's what's going on there. Paul says, oh, no, no, no. And what's the heart of Paul's letter to the church at Philippi? Joy. Joy. Joy in suffering. Be grateful and understand that what's happening to you is happening to you because God is using you to do something that only you can do in that position. So he writes back and he encourages them. So this idea of persecution being some sort of cleansing thing is absolute nonsense. Persecution has happened throughout church history. Continues to happen in our day. I say this so many times. We keep reading about the Coptics in Egypt. These in the your brothers and sisters in India, folks, in Asia, who are being slaughtered for the gospel. But now what, there's some persecution coming out there that's going to help all of us? What an American way to look at things. Pathetic from a biblical perspective and very, very sad. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation. Oh, but it doesn't stop there. And then they will kill you. It said when Paul went on the Appian, I think it was the Appian Way, I'm just drew a blank here, when they took him out to cut his head off, that he was singing praises to the Lord. Can you imagine being changed, led to where you're going to lay down and they're going to whack your head off? It's just going, Lord, I lift your name on high. How cool is that? You came to heaven, to earth, and lay down to show the way. From the earth to the cross. I mean, what a way to go. Yeah. But anyway, that's what's going to happen. You'll be killed. Oh, but here's the part that we can't take. Oh, I can stand the torture and I can stand the killing, but you're also going to be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Oh, well, I don't like that so much. I would prefer to be popular. We're not going to say anything in our church that's going to step on anyone's toes. So we're not going to talk about sin and judgment of God. You know, heaven forbid, we're going to put on shows and show dramas and movies and do big musical things, and they'll come by the thousands. Were they right? Yes, they were. These churches are enormous in their size. Thousands and thousands and thousands come to hear these people that never talk about sin and the devastating effects. These guys are unwilling to stand on the road and say, dude, the bridge is out. If you go that way, you'll be destroyed. And they write books that sell millions, so they get more money. And they give us this really cool gospel stuff that just keeps going on, and it is absolutely nauseating. What do you think is going to happen to these people when their heads are on the block? Then what? A better life, they write to us. Really? What's a better life? Paul said, sacrifice. That's the better life. But by the thousands, people are going, and isn't that what Paul said? In the last days, they're going to call people to them who are going to scratch their itching ears. Oh, tell us about God, bro. Just don't tell us about sin. Oh, we don't like the idea of sin. It just makes us uncomfortable. Ooh, you know, can't use this phrase, can't use that phrase. Ay, ay, ay. This politically correct stuff now with the football team, the Redskins. Really? Look, I'm not... Well, we all get it. We get it. Okay, well, what happens now when some dolphin comes up on the beach and says, you know, my feelings are hurt. We can change the name of the dolphins? You know? Or a bear goes, oh, hey, I really appreciate you guys calling yourself after me. Really? Seahawk, rah, comes in. Stop calling your team Seahawk, rah. I mean, really? Listen, it's funny, I know, but tell me that it isn't next in line. Tell me that. Because there's the animal rights people, the animal rights activists. Well, I don't think it's fair that we talk about, you know, eagles and Seahawks and Cardinals and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Of course, there'll always be the Cowboys. Rawr, we're American, right? Anyway, you get the idea. Sad, sad, sad. You will be hated, Jesus said. Hated. They will despise you. Was he right? Yes, he was. You don't think it's right? Go down and try to go down to our school here, our high school, any of our schools. Try to go in there and preach the Christ to the kids and tell them that there is hope for a future. We all know what'll happen, don't we? They don't want to hear that. But of course, you go to a high school game and you watch all these kids walk down on senior night with their parents, but the parents aren't there. So a coach escorts them through because none of the parents are there. But that's okay. Just don't bring Christ into the picture. Sad and pathetic. That's what it is. You will be hated by all nations. Why? For my name's sake. You Christians. They hate us. They love the idea of Christ like Gandhi, the great healer, the master, the teacher, the lover, you know, the stuff like that. What they failed to miss is the one that went into the temple and kicked the crud out of things because they had failed to do what God had asked them to do. Many will be offended, will betray one another and hate one another. Did you catch that? It's internal. Brothers fighting brothers, and it goes on. Many will then be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive me. This is the third time he has brought this up. You think he's got a point? Because we've got prophets out there who got all their TV shows and all of this stuff, and people are following them like mice off the cliff. It's sad. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. Because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Love will be out the door. It'll be self-preservation, no longer a concern for anyone else, because the concern will be for themselves. But he who endures till the end shall be saved. Aha! See, there you go. If you're a believer, you've got to endure to the end if you want to be saved, you want to be delivered. Who's he talking to? Hello. What's he talking about? Hello, hello. He's not talking to the church here. He's telling the apostles so that they could share this. This is what's going to happen to you guys. He that endures to the end is the one that endures all of these things of the Jews. And that's precisely what will happen. He who endures to the end shall be saved. Notice now, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, ethnos, all the people groups, Shitswa, Kekchi, Akka, gosh, we could go on and on, Shitewe, all of the people groups that God has used us, our fellowship, to reach. We're doing what he's asked us to do. That's why we will not stop doing missions work. I don't care if we have to meet in the desert on folding chairs. We will continue to minister the gospel to our world because Jesus said we should. He's just talking about it here, but later in another chapter, he's going to tell us that it's a command. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. Notice now, and there's another, what? Then. And then. So here we're continuing this sequence. These are the things that are going to happen immediately during the church age. The great delay. This is the first things that are going to happen. These are the second things that are going to happen. It's going to move from local conflict to global conflict. It's going to move from nation against nation to kingdom of kingdom. Kingdom of God, kingdom of Allah, kingdom of whatever. Fill in your blank. Kingdom of man. That's what's going on today in our world. No matter what they tell you, pay attention. You'll see that this is true. And then as you move through this, then something happens. And then the tribulation begins. And we just read it. And then Jesus said, the end will come. Things are going to heat up. So here's our chart, what we've been looking at. 9 to 14 is the first 3.5 years of that last 7-year period, the 70th week. It's tribulation, Jesus says, because we're going to see there's a big change. Here's the things that we see that are going to take place during that time. They're all on a global perspective. Persecution and martyrdom, 2,000 years of it. It's not necessary that the church goes through it anymore in the future. It's already happening to the church, just not the American church. Hatred from all nations. All nations. When we were in England, the question arose when we ordered a meal. Did you guys know that it's illegal in the UK to pray in public? And we weren't sure what we should do. We thought, you know what? We may not get to Africa. We're going to pray. We had fish and chips. Yes, we did. So we prayed. Nobody said anything, thank God. But you can see one of those dudes walking around with them big hats coming after us. Didn't happen. Persecution and martyrdom, hatred from all nations. There's going to be that offense we talked about, betrayal. Why? For my name's sake. See? I mean, it ain't like, you know, this is this whole concept of conspiracy, people always looking for the next little thing. Stop it. Stop. He just told you what's going to happen. Why do you need to look elsewhere? This is what's going to happen. You must stand. This is normal. Stop trying to figure it out. Who cares? Oh, I just read a thing, Rick, that they're going to put a chip in our hands and stuff now. So? What's your point? Oh, that's the mark of the beast. No, it's not. Now, could it be used for that? Yes, it could. I'm telling you, people have brought this stuff to me repeatedly. Because we've all heard it. Are they going to put a chip in there? Oh, that's the mark of the beast. I'm not going to take it. Take the chip. If they give you a chip, offer a chip to it. The mark of the beast in the book of Revelation is an identification that you recognize him as your God. Now you're in trouble. You take that chip. I'm not saying everybody should run down to the store and get a chip. Don't misunderstand. Please, I'm not saying that. I'm saying stop worrying about it. It will be obvious. It's very clear. The person that worships the beast and does his bidding, and worships his image and takes the mark, this is the person that will be kept out. You can't leave the rest of the verse out. Okay? So we got to stop with this nonsense. We have a job to do. We got enough to worry about without worrying about what's gone the inner stinking net. Holy cow. Because there's no end to it, is there? Ay, ay, ay. Then, there's our then. False prophets. Again, deception, lawlessness, cold-heartedness, global gospel. Then the end will come. Then. There's another then. That's where we're going now. Now, before we get into this, we're moving into the last part now of what is called that 70th week, what is called, we're going to call that Great Tribulation. Here's where that comes from. Notice this is verse 27 now. Jesus is doing a commentary on the book of Daniel in response to Daniel's prayer. What's going to happen? And God said, 490 years, that's what's going on. You're in the last seven. Notice, well, how do you know that, Rick? Because of verse 27. Then he, we're going to see who this he is. He's a boastful, arrogant king. We call him Antichrist. He's an arrogant jerk, is who he is. Loudmouth, big mouth, the arrogant one. Anybody fit that role? Then he shall confirm a covenant for 1 week. Now, did you catch that? It does not say he's going to make the covenant. It says he will confirm the covenant. So in other words, this thing will be already in the process and he will put his stamp of approval on it. It's called the peace process. Because of the results. And we know that later on, Paul tells us that there's going to be supposed peace represented by a white rider on a white horse. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. Now we already know what a week is. 7 years. The last period of the 70 weeks. So this is the 70th week. But in the middle of that week, in the middle of that last 70th week, notice, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering, and on the wing of abominations shall be one who makes desolate. What's he saying here? Gabriel is telling Daniel, there's going to come a point in history where there's going to be another temple. You can't bring sacrifice and offering without a temple. You can't do it. You just can't. It has to be rebuilt. So this guy, as part of the process, is going to allow Israel to rebuild their temple. And if you don't think they're barking at the mouth to get that done now, then you really need to pay attention to what's going on. Do you realize they have every single article necessary for a new temple? They have a new altar of incense built, just like prescribed in the scripture. They have an Ark of the Covenant built, though they're trying to find the original one. They've got a model just in case. They've got the menorah built to the specifications given to Moses. They've got the table of showbread built. They've got all the stuff necessary to make not only the holy place, but the holy of holies. Outside of that, before that, they've got the laver already built, the big wash basin kind of thing. They've already got the burnt altar of burnt offering, the huge one that sets outside as you enter into the temple. They've got it built. They have the tunic, the turban, the chest piece, the Urim and the Thummim. It's all made and it's all ready to go. They have identified, since they've become a nation, all of the people that are in the line or of Levi, which of course are the priests, to establish the Levitical priesthood once again. And interestingly enough, this is a known fact, I'm not telling you anything that's not true, that when they do DNA, because Israel did that to try to help locate what family line these people were in. Well, I'm of Judah. Well, I'm of Benjamin. I'm of, you know, Naphtali. I'm of Asher, whatever. Okay? And as they were doing all of that, they found that the guys that were all within the family of Levi, the priestly line, that there's a little thing within their DNA and their RNA that marks them completely separate than all of the others. What a coincidence. Really? It's DNA. There's no such thing as coincidence. Gee, how can that be? Because God said it would. Gabriel is telling him, this is all ready to go. It took him forever to find the sea snail that puts out the purple to make the right color in the robes. They fought forever. And then the big thing now is over the red heifer. Because to consecrate everything, you have to have the ashes of a red heifer, and it has to be mixed with holy water, and it has to be sprinkled on the altar before the altar can be used. And now they got a big debate going on as to whether you have to have it added to the old or the original stuff, or whether you can make it new and start again. There's both schools of thought. No. We have to find the original, otherwise we can't purify. The other guy said, the original is gone. We need to make new. Lo and behold, just about 18 months ago, or maybe a little longer than that, but they found in one of the diggings a vial that they tested. Guess what it is? It's water and DNA from a red heifer. It's been gelled, and so now the big argument is, well, but it's gelled. What are we going to do now? Can you just see it? But this is what's happening. This is what's happening. Just like Daniel said, just like Jesus said, the bridge is out. It's out. It's headed in this direction. But notice this. So this new thing that's got to be built on a portion of it, there's going to be an abomination. We're going to see what that is here in just a minute. What's that abomination? One that brings desolation. In other words, complete annihilation. Even until the consummation, notice, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate. In other words, what's going to happen in this last 3.5 year period is God's wrath will be complete on the nations of the earth. That's the 70th week. Okay, that's just exactly, now we're going back to Matthew. Remember I said why we keep tying back to Daniel? Because Jesus did. Therefore, Jesus said, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by who? Daniel the prophet. Oh, so Jesus is using Daniel as his format. Of course he is. You know how many times I've gotten into big tiffs with people over who wrote the book of Daniel? You see, if you don't like the Bible and you don't like Christianity, you got to get rid of Daniel. You got to get it out of there with Genesis chapters 1 through 11, too. Can't have Genesis 1 through 11, and you can't have Daniel. You just can't because it totally blows you out of the water. So you have to get rid of it. You have to criticize it. You have to tear it down. You have to make fun of it. You got to get rid of Daniel. Daniel couldn't possibly have written the book of Daniel, they say. It's too accurate, even the critics says. It's too accurate. It was written by somebody much later who attributed it back to Daniel. What they're neglecting to tell you is that it was translated in 285 BC, a book that had already been completed, we know, for almost 200 years in Hebrew, was translated from Hebrew, that had been around for a couple of hundred years or more, and translated in 285 BC into a Greek translation because Alexander had made everybody in the world speak Greek. So the people started not to be able to read Hebrew. So they said, well, we got to translate this into the Greek. And so there were 70 scholars assigned to do just that, to take the Hebrew scriptures, of which Daniel was one, and translated the book of Daniel into the new Greek language so that everybody would have it. That translation in 285 BC was called the Septuagint. Septa, seven. Because there were 70 guys that wrote it. So to say that Daniel was written at a later date and attributed to Daniel is to deny historical fact. And these people are full of, well, you know what they're full of. But most of God's people are unaware. We believe that. Well, yeah, I mean, come on. You know, couldn't God have done this? And no, no, Daniel was written by that. But leave all that aside. Who cares? Who cares? Jesus said Daniel wrote it. What else do we need to know? Now, if Jesus said Daniel wrote it, and you don't want to believe him, you got serious problems. Because Daniel, or Jesus attributed to him. So when you see this spoken of by Daniel the prophet, where was it spoken by Daniel the prophet? We just read it. Verse 27 of chapter 9. Spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, that's on the wing of abominations. Now notice the next phrase. Whoever reads, let him understand. Was there anything written after Jesus said these words right then and there? No, there was not. The Gospel of Mark, we believe, was the first gospel written, and it wasn't written until almost 40 years after Jesus was resurrected and returned to heaven, leaving the church to go out and to share the gospel with the world. And yet here is Jesus before his words were ever recorded. He's not talking about Daniel, because he's tying what was said in Daniel to what he's just said. Whoever reads this, then let him understand. I mean, how many times do we have to read Jesus' words that, listen, when you see these things, pay attention before we start paying attention? When are we going to figure this out and start quibbling over whether it's what our eschatological position, in other words, end times position is? Who cares? This is what Jesus taught. Get over it. If you take him at his word, he doesn't leave you any options. But he wants us to understand it. When you see this, when this takes place, you need to understand that something is getting worse. There's a change taking place. This is the event that describes that. An event that we've already described is just on the horizon, folks. It's just on the horizon. They're getting ready to do this. If they can just figure this out. Wouldn't it be interesting if somebody comes on the scene and says, I know how we can solve the problem. Let's just let the Jews build their temple next to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now there'd be people crying out all over the world. Or the Dome of the Rock. Just let them build their temple. This would bring peace. Let the Arabs have their place of worship. Let the Jews have their place of worship. Does that seem unlikely to you? It's not that far-fetched, is it? It is now, but very shortly things could change. One, Syria could have a huge impact on this. One, Iran, coupled with one, Russia. Gee, imagine, for the first time in history, they're talking and planning on what they're going to do about the Jews. Unbelievable, unbelievable. The rise of the arrogant king, here's that guy. Now, it's not till Daniel chapter 11 that we find out who this guy is. Remember I talked about the kings of the north and the kings of the south? Well, we know from history was the Ptolemies, kings of the south, the Seleucids in the north. The Seleucids would end up overcoming, and they would be the ones that would establish or would carry on Alexander's kingdom. They would establish places like Turkey and so on and so forth. But then there's a king that comes on the scene that moves beyond the historical. Now notice what this king does. This is not did not happen in history, by the way. People say, well, it was Antiochus Epiphanes. No, it wasn't. He didn't fulfill any of this except being arrogant. Then the king, this particular king of the north, who now has control, he's a Seleucid. In other words, Syrian king. But Syria in the scripture, remember, included Turkey and parts of the Pakistan and Afghanistan. This king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every, notice the little g, God. Shall speak blasphemies against the capital G, God, the God of the scripture, true God, El, yes, by the way. And he shall exalt and magnify himself above every God, and he shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods. Oh, and he's going to prosper. But only until the wrath has been accomplished. There's wrath coming on this guy. God is going to bring wrath. Not Israel, not America, not this religion nor this denomination. God will bring wrath. So the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined, I love this phrase, shall be done. Well, I don't believe that. Well, we don't really care what you believe. We're not interested in your opinion. That's what it says. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women. The desire of women, remember when Daniel wrote this, was to be the mother of Messiah. It's what women wanted. And he's going to completely disregard this whole concept of Messiah, in particular the virgin birth of Messiah. What's a common thread for the cults? Deny the virgin birth of Christ. Deny the virgin birth within other religions. Ay, ay, ay. Sad, sad. For he shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women, nor regard any God. Why? Because he's going to exalt himself above them all. So notice what's happening. He's going to exalt himself and magnify himself above every God. This is why I believe, I've shared this with you before, could be wrong, it's a Rick thing, it's on record, I'm not saying it will, I'm saying it very well could make sense to me. I think this is going to be an Islamic leader. And I believe he's going to do all of these things, and that at some point he's going to even turn against his God Allah, and he's going to elevate himself up enough. Because Islam will receive a striking blow when they couple with Russia to come against Israel in the very near future. So that's just what I think. Okay, not a put down, it's just what I think is happening. Until wrath is accomplished. Wow, that sounds just like what Paul wrote to the church of Thessalonica. Let no one deceive you by any means. That day, what day? Not the rapture of the church. The second coming, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. See, I told you the church had to fall away. Do you realize that what that phrase that's written there, until the King James was written, was always translated, caught up, taken out, taken away? Now, either way, it says the same thing, really, but I just find that kind of fascinating. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away or the catching away, just saying. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. Notice what's going to happen. That day, the day of wrath cannot come until, first of all, there's whichever way you go, whether there's a catching away or whether there's a falling away, because it's translated in English, but it literally means to be removed. And the man of sin is revealed. So this can't happen until this happens, and this can't happen until this happens. The New Testament never teaches the study of rapture. Really? Have you never read 1st or 2nd Thessalonians? And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. Now, what does this guy do? The man of sin, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped. That's why if you come into his kingdom and you worship him, you're rejecting God and you will suffer the judgment. That's the mark. That's what will mark you. So that he sits as God where? In the temple. He's going to sit in the temple, but there's no temple. Ah, not yet there isn't. Showing himself, notice, that he is God. This is going to be this claim. Then let those who were in the mountain or in Judea flee to the mountains, and let him who was on the housetop not go down to take anything out. Let him who was in the field not go back to get his clothes. I don't want to leave my charger jacket. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. Tough to run with that. Although I do it all the time. Just kidding. Big old belly out there. Oh, it's not as easy to run as it once was. And my back. I'm just kidding. Anyway, but woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. You better hope that when these things happen, that you're not in any way hindered. That's ultimately what he's saying. Because when you see this taking place, this is Jesus talking. When you see these things, and you will, because they're determined, when you see these things, what's he saying? Beat feet. Get the crud out of Dodge. In this case, Jerusalem. Flee. Interesting. The people that understood what Jesus said about 30 years later, 40 years almost after this, in 70 AD when the Romans came in and destroyed the city, gosh, I'm going to run myself out of time again. When the Romans surrounded this, those that had listened to what the apostles had said, the Christians, in other words, in the city of Jerusalem, they saw Titus, the general Titus, come and surround the city. And they thought, oh no, he was laying siege to the city. And they thought, we didn't escape, we didn't get out. They were taking this to mean that period of time, because oftentimes scripture has kind of a dual meaning. So Titus now has the city surrounded and all the believers are in there, and they begin to pray. This is, again, Josephus records this for us. Historian, not a Christian, historian. A Jewish historian, by the way. And as he's writing this, what happens is his father, Vespasian, is in Rome, and he's fighting to become the Roman emperor. Wants to become Caesar. And just about the time Titus surrounds the city and has it all under control in Jerusalem, Vespasian sends a note to him about a week into this siege and says, hey, dude, forget Jerusalem. I need you back here. Because for me to get Caesar, there could be some booty. So I want you to come with your army. And guess what happened? Historical fact, folks. Historical fact. Titus then recalls his army and begins to move back towards Jerusalem. Towards Rome to help Vespasian. Just about the time they were about to leave, Vespasian writes back and says, hey, I'm now Caesar. Go get the Jews. And as he turned around to come back, the Christians once again saw it. And Josephus, the historian, records for us that no Christians were slaughtered in the city because they took Jesus' words and they got out of Dodge. Historical fact. They fled the city because they thought this was the period of time. And Josephus says, none who claimed the name of Christ were found in that city. Do you know that when Titus did that and destroyed the temple, which was when Jesus told the apostles that's what's going to happen, that there were 2 million Jews slaughtered, men, women, and children. Just 40 years after Jesus said these words. But the Christians weren't there because they had listened to their Lord and had responded and got out of Dodge. Historical fact. Interesting. When you take the Lord at his word, what happens? For then there will be, notice the change, great tribulation such as not been since the beginning of the world, nor until this time, nor ever shall be. In other words, this last period of time is going to be like nothing else on the planet. This is the part of the scripture that people take and start talking about the world without man because they fail to read the rest of the story. Such has not been since the beginning of the world until this time there ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, there wouldn't be a single human being alive. That's what Jesus said. Contrary to what the Discovery Channel tells us. No flesh would be saved. But for the elect sect, that is, by the way, folks, Israel, if you understand Israel, the Gentiles, and the church, the doctrine of election will not be an issue. Then if anyone says to you at those times, under those circumstances, Jesus said, if anybody says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it. Don't believe it. How many times now have we seen this false Christ? There's always somebody that shows up with supposedly has the answers. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders. Did you catch that part added to it? They're going to show up showing great signs and wonders. Oh, only Jesus could raise that man from the dead. He has to be Jesus. Oh, only Jesus could give sight to the blind and you know, ears to the deaf. Only Jesus could do. Must be Jesus. We have to worship it. He's really the Messiah. Jesus said, don't you stink and believe it. And we're going to see why when we move into the next part of that. Notice verse 25. See? I love this. I have told you beforehand. So don't be sniveling about what's happening in the world. Of course it's happening in the world. We've already talked about this. You're not going to be popular. They're never going to accept you. Your government is going to turn against you. They're not going to let you pray. They're not going to let you. It's going to happen. So deal with it. It's just the way that it is. It's been that way for 2,000 years for everybody else in the world. I've told you beforehand. Now, this is really interesting to conclude. Therefore, if they say to you, look, he is in the desert, do not go out. Where? In the desert. This is why I do not believe that Rome is the bad city spoken of in Jerusalem. If you were going to talk about, warn somebody about what's coming out of Rome, which is where it's, you know, the revived Roman Empire, which rules this, which is one king is going to ultimately get control of, revived Roman Empire. If you're going to say somebody be, you know, that the Messiah is someplace, and if you're going to use Rome, you're not going to talk about the desert. Why would you do that? This is Jesus saying this. You would say by the sea or whatever, by the hills, the grassy knolls, whatever. No, he says in the desert. So the idea being that there's something going on that everybody says he's out there in the desert. For Jesus and those that were listening to him, where would the desert be? Israel, the Middle East. That's where it would be. But do not go out. Or if they say to you, in other words, look, he's in the inner rooms. Do not believe it. Okay? Okay, here we go. We're going to fly through this because I wasted too much time. It was ginger. Took too much time up here. Just kidding. I don't know what else I need to say. It is so clear. Jesus warned us. We have had this in our possession since it was first printed. Even before that, it was in scroll form. They were passing it around the churches. Why are we so concerned and confused about what is happening in the world? He told us. Why? It's all right here. Now, doesn't it make sense then that we should probably spend as much time as we could in this to learn to understand the things that he's teaching us? Of course. This is why we do all the fellowships and all of the stuff that we talked about earlier. We're trying to learn this thing, to see what it means to us in our circumstances and under the situations that we find ourselves in. Because folks, you already know this. You don't need me to tell this. You're not going to find hope anywhere else. So stop looking. It's not in your job. It's not in your career. It's not in your retirement. It's not in your education. It's not in your family. All of those things are temporal. Good things. I'm saying don't put hope in those things. The hope is in that which is eternal. Truth. And this truth, as Jesus said, I have told you beforehand. Nobody will stand before God and say, I did not know. No one. We all knew because he had told us beforehand. We sang that song to begin with or earlier before we actually started. Take me past the outer courts. I can't remember how it goes. I drew a blank on the words. I don't want to find it. But anyway, you get the idea. Do you know when you sing that song what you're talking about? You're talking about the tabernacle. Of which God said, and remember, tabernacle means tent. Tent of meeting, literally. It's the place where God dwelt among his people. And when God gave Moses in the book of Exodus, and then the rules for what they would do there in Leviticus, when God gave that blueprint to Moses, he said, I want you to build it just like this, because this is a copy of the one in heaven. People fail to understand that. When you look at the book of Revelation and John is in heaven, where is John? He's in the tabernacle. He sees the altar. He sees the everything we just described that they're building to build their new temple. All those articles are there. Because that's the true tabernacle, not made with hands. So when you sing that song, the cry of that song is, take me past the outer courts and to the courts of praise or whatever, past the brazen altar, because I want to see your face. At least I got some of it down, right? And then you're moving. What's the goal? To get beyond those things. Take me in to the Holy of Holies. But you can only be taken in by the blood of the Lamb. You see, when you came into the tabernacle, the first thing you were confronted with was sacrifice, the altar of burnt offering, that Jesus gave himself and shed his blood. Once you got past that, you came to the laver and you were washed and cleansed by the blood. Once that blood was taken and you were covered, you could enter the first place and you would see the menorah, the light of the Lord, with the seven spirits of God represented there. And it would shine on the table of showbread, the offering of God, the nation of Israel, as well as God's people. And then you would continue to move forward and you would come to a smaller gold altar that was called the altar of incense that stood outside the curtain of the Holy Holies, Holy of Holies. And the incense was constantly burned going up towards God, which was the prayers of the saints. Read Revelation chapter 6. This is all of the things. And then when the curtain, but there is no curtain because the curtain was torn when Jesus died on the cross, because the way had been opened. And now you can enter into the Holy of Holies. But you can only go there with the blood of the Lamb. That's what we're singing when we say that song. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. The blood has been provided. And when we get there, like John, it was the Lamb that will take us and bring us into the presence of the Father, into the Holy of Holies. So this stuff is kind of bad news, but you see what God is doing? Is He's getting ready to establish His kingdom. And man will have run his course. God will have allowed man to run things as man see fit, and obviously man can't figure it out. And so God will allow man what he's always wanted, a world without God. It's called the 70th week of Daniel. A world without God. But we know where it leads. Amen?